Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Hello and welcome to Education, Technology, Society. This is a podcast where we talk about all things to do with digital technology and education, but from a slightly more critical perspective than is often the case. Today we're talking about digital technologies and early childhood education. And I'm joined by Antti Pekkari from Tampere University, who talks about his own research into digital technology in Finnish early childhood centres, everything from digital portfolios to fitness activity trackers. Now, early childhood education is not an education sector that you frequently see covered in the critical education technology literature. And as Antti explains, it's a really interesting site for some of the main critical ed tech questions that we're asking at the moment. And in particular, his work looks at datafication and data-driven technologies, and also how local ed tech firms can sell quite dubious technology to education leaders. So I was really interested to hear what early childhood education has to tell us about the current state of technology use in education. And I'm sure there's loads here for us all to make connections with. Enjoy. What forms of digital technology would we find in an early childhood setting in Finland? And what forms of technology might you find elsewhere in the world that are not actually present in Finnish early childhood centres?
I think in general, you would probably find less technology than in many places. You'd have the occasional iPad, of course, and different learning games and so. But those would not really be used in an official sense. They'd be more like fulfilling the time every now and again. And then learning management apps or school management systems, which are kind of promoted with the idea of making it easier to communicate with the parents and that kind of stuff.
Is there much Wi-Fi? Are the staff really high-tech?
It varies very much. And in some places, you might not even have a good Wi-Fi. I think it's kind of indicative of people not perhaps considering it as the kind of the first important thing in early childhood education. And I think the staff kind of, some people know how to use devices well, some don't, but I think most of them don't really see that as the most important thing, which I kind of totally agree with, obviously. But yeah, so there would be a lot of variance in that.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in how kind of crappy technology gets into education settings on a very kind of local basis. And it's not the global ambitions of big tech companies all the time getting their big tech products into schools. But it's often done on a very local basis, local firms, local education managers making very bad decisions. And I know you've done a research project on how one municipality ran an activity tracker initiative in early years settings. First of all, I'm just interested, what were the intentions behind this? I mean, what was the municipality trying to do?
Yeah, I think the point you're making is really good. Maybe Finland is an interesting case in that sense because it's a bit distant and we've got a small language with not many speakers. So yeah, the municipalities, they have a lot of independence. They have a legal requirement to arrange the early childhood education. But then how they do it is up to them.
Yeah.
So there's a market position there for small companies that have some products they want to maybe market them to the municipalities and get their foot in the door. And this was, I think, something that happened with the activity trackers that we were investigating. And it connects with a kind of an ongoing worry about children not getting enough exercise.
Yeah.
So that's basically what was the motivation behind the thing. There was a ministry report in 2016 that said that children need to get 3 hours of exercise. And after that, people have been kind of worried about it and being very anxious to promote child exercise. And these activity trackers were seen as a way of encouraging children to move and to make it fun, make it exciting. So that's how they kind of came about.
And so, I mean, what tech were we talking about? Were they giving activity trackers to all the kids, or what was the actual program?
Yeah, it was like a handheld activity tracker, like those smartwatches that adults also use. And the company gave them to the early childhood centers that wanted to participate. So there were a bunch of ECEC centers involved, and then the children, they all got a tracker in their hand, and then it measured their steps during the day.
this all sounds fine. So, I mean, how did it actually pan out? What actually happened? What were the...
Yeah, it was really interesting to see that even though everybody seemed to have like positive experiences about it, it also seemed to do other things on the side, kind of, as you often notice with tech, that it has its own agendas, kind of. And it seemed that the data that the tracker was producing was surprisingly powerful. The teachers, who were very experienced professionals and had a long experience of working with children and also knew these children in some cases really well, had been working with these children for a longer time as well. We noticed that they started kind of categorizing the children on basis of the data that the trackers were producing. And at the same time, they were also kind of suspicious about the data.
Mm.
And this is something that you kind of notice it quite often with self-tracking technologies, for example. And there's been talk about broken data, for example, that the device gives you some data and it's supposed to be a reflection of you, but it's not really.
Mm.
And you don't feel that the data is exactly right. It's kind of in the ballpark, but not exactly. But the interesting thing, I think, is what happens after that, after you realize that this data is not really me. And then I think what quite often happens is that people kind of start to trust the data anyway, because it's so hard to kind of live with the cognitive dissonance of having data and not believing the data.
Mm.
So I think you kind of end up trusting the data quite a lot. And it was really interesting talking with these teachers, for example, because they said that, well, this activity tracker is creating these categories for the children. These children are shown as active and these other children are shown as passive. And it doesn't really correspond with what I see or what I've experienced with this child. But then the tracker is showing it, so I guess it must be true. And what happened was that as they started to categorize the children as active or non-active, they also started to encourage the children that were seen as non-active. They started to encourage them to move more, which led to these crazy situations that you had five-year-olds having like walking meetings in the yard because they were told that you need more exercise. And then you had these children going around in circles in the yard, and then everybody was seemingly happy because now they had a better score in the app. But the whole thing was kind of nonsensical at the same time as well.
Yeah, they'd hit their 10,000 steps for the day.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, one of the funny things is with education that, I mean, education settings have always been criticized for labeling students. You know, before digital technologies, you'd label students as having special needs. Or what was different, do you think, with these activity trackers?
I guess you could think that it gets closer to you. It's in a more intimate level because it's not someone imposing a label you from a point of an external authority, but it's actually something like an innocent objective device you have on your hand, which is telling the truth about your bodily way of being.
Mm.
So I think you kind of experience it in a different way. And when people talk about technology, they don't often see them as distant authorities, but something that's very intimate and very close to you.
Well, it's a fascinating example. I mean, I think early childhood settings are a really interesting place to be doing critical education technology research. And you're doing a bigger project now on digital portfolios, which is another kind of, you know, technology that's often talked about. I mean, just before we talk about this project, again, can you just tell us what the technology actually is and what the technology is actually supposed to do? I mean, what is the promise of this technology?
Yeah, I guess it comes back to the fact that the basic use for many digital technologies in early childhood education somehow relates to assessment. And since that's kind of off the table because you can't assess children and like grade them or give them numbers in that way in Finland in early childhood education. So when that's off the table, then you move on to communication. And this is something that's kind of marketed with the idea of making communication easier with the parents, for example. And digital portfolios are like, it's like a notebook. We used to have a notebook, like a paper notebook that the teachers wrote stuff on and then put it in the child's backpack and then it traveled home with you and then you could answer. So it's a kind of a digital extension of that. But it also seems to be a lot more in the sense that there's a lot of hope in involving the parents a lot more into the early childhood education. And that's the angle that the tech developers have definitely chosen. They talk about how it makes it easier to communicate with the parents, easier to involve the parents. And a good question, I guess, is how involved do the parents want to be?
Yeah.
In this case, it seemed that they didn't want to be very involved. I think earlier research has, for a long time, it kind of has shown that it changes the role of the teacher in a way that you become less of a pedagogue and more of an observer. Then there's the technical hassle that you have to be constantly on the prowl for content for the digital portfolio. Like, you start thinking about the early childhood or the teacher's work that you're doing, you start thinking about, like, what looks good in the portfolio. Can I take a photo of this? Many situations you can't really take out the camera, like people were talking about, like how the many aspects of the basic care are totally absent from the portfolios, because when you're putting on clothes, like putting on winter overalls for the kids, you can't be taking photos
or taking them to the toilet or doing one of the many things you do in early childhood centers,
which are all like the most important things.
I love this idea of teachers being worried about content creators and thinking this would be a great moment for content for the portfolio, which must change your mindset completely about how you work and how you are seen to be working.
Yeah, the developers were heavily kind of leaning on the fact that this is so easy and now you can so easily communicate with the parents, but I think the teachers quite well kind of saw through it and they were not too invested in it, and they were like, well, okay, we'll put some stuff in there, but I don't know if it's going to make any difference. And it was quite interesting to see that there is a new kind of a nexus of maybe power or governance, in the sense that you have these apps that are developed in like private contexts without any government mandate or anything like that. And the developers are, they might be like parents themselves with some IT capabilities and so on. And it's quite a common idea nowadays. Let's do an app for this and this.
Yeah.
So you have these like really enthusiastic people that are not necessarily like total experts in the area, but they have some expertise, they have personal experiences and so on. They start developing something. In one case, they were talking quite explicitly about how they have some experiences with the British system, which is totally different. Like you have different curriculums and different everything. And you could see that the kind of the basic idea behind the app, the digital portfolio app, was pretty strongly influenced by the British system and a different way of documenting what children do. And then you might have a private daycare center that latches onto the app. And they together, they kind of start to develop a pedagogy almost. Like, that's where the plans for the future early childhood education are kind of made without ever kind of saying it out loud. But that's where something seems to be happening in this cooperation between small private companies and then small private daycare providers, for example. And this is totally invisible if you only look at what happens on the level of governance or what happens on the level of politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that comes to mind as well about getting parents more involved in their children's education is there are often kind of class imbalances as well. See, if you've got a very kind of middle class parental group, I imagine that causes tensions.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And it definitely creates this kind of a clientele mentality. And then when you're the client, you know that the client is always right. And you know that as a client, you can, or as a customer, you can make requests and you have hopes. And then if you're the provider or the one who's kind of servicing the customer, then you have to abide. But in the data we had, I would say that the parents were largely uninvolved. Like, they wouldn't really make any contact. Like, the app didn't really make any difference in that sense. But from the side of the teachers, there was a definite kind of wish to be more acknowledged. And that ties into the social classes that you were talking about, because early childhood education teachers are quite heavily underpaid. And there's a huge kind of staff shortage at the moment in Finland. They're highly educated, not well paid, and it's hard to get qualified teachers. And then when you have, for example, around the capital, Helsinki, areas where it's very expensive to live, then it's hard to get staff there because you can't live over there on the teacher's salary. And then you end up having to kind of use the portfolio as a way of justifying the good work you do to parents who earn twice or three times as much as you do. And then it turns out that they don't really even read the portfolio. And you had the undertone that perhaps the teachers expected that the portfolio would make their work visible to the parents and they would get more appreciation. But it's not a matter of just one simple technology. It's more like a social class issue.
Yeah, your work will not be appreciated just because there's an app where your work is visible.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
yeah.
must be soul destroying. But I mean, it's interesting that you said assessment of young children is kind of not allowed in early childhood settings, because I guess one of the themes of your work is that most digital technologies lead to some form of assessment. We've got all sorts of technologies that monitor and track and report on students. So I mean, to what extent do you think that the kind of digitally driven assessment of young children in early childhood centres is just happening anyway, just through the use of all sorts of technologies, a kind of stealth assessment?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And in many cases, I think technologies definitely have their own agendas. And I think an interesting question is kind of coming back to the data, that how do you produce data that doesn't really lead to categorization and assessment? Because like the obvious kind of rhetoric always goes that there's no technology here. We need technology because technology makes things easier. And it makes things easier because now we know something that we didn't know before, because now we have this data. And then that kind of leads to people thinking that the technology is good in as such and the data is good as such. But like, then what do they actually do, and where do they actually lead us? And it often seems that data just leads to more categorizations and more assessment as well.
Which is a depressing note to finish on. So I'm going to try and finish on a more hopeful note. How could things be different? I mean, do you actually think we just need to get rid of data-driven technologies and datafication from early childhood settings altogether? Or are other forms of data possible? Can you think of alternate, more hopeful data futures?
Yeah, there's definitely possibilities for alternative forms of data. I think the question of how to produce data that's not so obvious, not so categorizing, not so kind of set in stone and more open to interpretation, I think that's always an interesting question. And how to produce data that doesn't give you the answer immediately, that kind of stops you and makes you wonder a little bit, I think that's a good starting point. There's an interesting project going on at the moment, like a government agency produced assessment platform that's got a specific aim of not producing number-based data, like quantitative data that would be easily accessible. So it provides a lot of data, especially for the early childhood centers themselves, that they can kind of assess and develop their own work on. But it's all qualitative. It's like written answers. And of course, when people hear about data, then you immediately kind of see the glint in the eye that, okay, we'll get some bars and graphs. And this system is not producing that at all. So I think that's a good starting point, and that's something that we're looking at next. And we're trying to see what it actually, like, what are the consequences of this kind of data.
Absolutely. That's really interesting, because the work we've done on data in schools has often shown the best use of data is data that's produced by teachers. And the teachers would always say to you, the data is just the beginning of a narrative, the beginning of a conversation, the beginning of a story. So it's very much about, kind of, as you say, qualitative words rather than kind of definite numbers. So I think there's definitely ways to think about doing data differently in education. Well, I mean, it's a fascinating area to look at. I've never even done any research in early childhood, so I think you should definitely kind of carry on pushing this. And I'm sure there's lots of like-minded people listening as well. So good luck with the big project on datafication early childhood. I look forward to hearing more about it.
Thanks. It was nice talking to you.